Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Bonna Pfeiffer.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artist. And our guest this week, this is a short turnaround, Ilka Cochran of Mabel Figworthy's Fancies. Hi, Ilka.
Hello. I'm about to become a regular, I think.
Well, so. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, we'll take that. Yeah, I got Ilka back here on a short turnaround, and you know, because we want to. You know, just because we want to.
It's nice to feel wanted.
For those who don't know and haven't listened, this is Ilka's third time. So those who haven't listened to previous ones, first encountered Ilka many years ago now when she did a Hardanger stitch-along. And first, I always wanted to learn, and so I started it with her, and little 4-inch projects, 4x4-inch projects, and she took us from scratch to, it was 2 years of those things every month. It was
two separate cells, but right. Yes, they were a year each.
Yeah. Took us through 2 years, and I learned a lot. I never did finish it, but I got quite a ways and learned a lot and had a lot of fun doing it. And so that's where I first encountered you. Now, you've got a new one coming up here next year, right?
Stitching starts 1st of January 2020, yes. Well, if everything goes well. that's always the proviso. No, it's great fun. It's my first freestyle one. So the other two were both Hardanger. And I thought, well, I've sort of done that. I mean, how many 4x4 little designs can you do? Right. I'd already done another series as well, which was never a cell, and several others of that size. So I thought, well, you know, I've been getting into freestyle rather more lately. Why not do a cell for that one? I designed something for myself, and as I was looking at it, I thought, oh, this would quite easily fall into, you know, sort of 10 installments.
Yeah.
So, that made it rather suitable.
Now, is this an offshoot of your work at the Royal School, or just an area you've been exploring lately?
I think it's more the other way around. The doing the certificate at the Royal School of Needlework is an offshoot of getting more into freestyle embroidery. And it's one of the things that I'm trying to make absolutely clear to whoever signs up for the thing is that I started this Tree of Life long, long before I started the Tree of Life that I'm doing for the certificate project. And the last thing I want people to expect is that in 10 weeks I'm going to bring them up to RSN certificate standards. This is not what it's about. Yes, it's a Tree of Life, and yes, you could do it in crawl wool, but it is... It is less complex, shall we say, than the other one that I'm working on.
Oh, nuts. I was hoping in 10 installments I'd be getting a certificate. Oh.
Well, there you go. You know, middle of May and there you are. But it's going to be fun. It's going to I was taking stitch photographs this morning, and a friend sitting next to me said, "What's that?" I said, "Oh, that's the list." And she said, "That's a lot of stitches." So I think there's about 40 to 50 different stitches in there if you want to use them all.
Yeah.
And yeah, just.
Yeah. And not to have people intimidated, but my experience with Ilka's stitch-alongs really does an excellent job of starting you from scratch and the most basics, and then building off of that as you go along and explaining, and I learned so much. She really has I'm just going to promote you a little bit here, but she just really has a real nice ability to lead you along step by step and advance you through levels of difficulty without it really hurting at all. I mean, it's pretty smooth. You do a nice job, and explanations and everything, you know. And then support, you know, people, you know, right in with questions, and Ilka's right there with them. So it's, yeah.
So this time, for the first time, I'm going to have a Facebook group as well. So people can post their own pictures and comment on each other's pictures, as long as they're nice. and ask questions and everything. And for each of the parts, I will give alternatives so that if one stitch doesn't appeal to you, you can try another one. Or if you think, oh, I found that a bit too difficult, There's always alternatives, and it's very much meant for people who want to have a go. You know, if you've done cross stitch most of your life or some other counted technique and you think, do you know what? I really would like to try some freestyle. That's the people I'm sort of aiming at. Just get you going, get you to try it.
This starts January. People can sign up anytime now, and it starts in January. And you don't have any problem with somebody starting late, like if they don't get going until February, that's fine.
Oh, good heavens, no.
Yeah.
Nope. I'm going to keep the sign-up open until the end of May, which is, strictly speaking, after it's finished. But you can then have access to all the bits that you've missed. And, you know, even if you do start on the 1st of January, there's absolutely no deadlines or no rush. If you want to take a month over the first part, I mean, I just had pictures sent to me last month of a lady who had finally finished into the most gorgeous box, the Hardanger designs of the 2013.
Oh, my. So there's still hope for me.
Oh, there is, yes. So she got there in the end. Sign up was going to start on the 1st of December. And then I realized that I'm actually going to be in the Netherlands from the 3rd to the 7th, which is not ideal timing. So I've opened it up to a bit earlier. But if people sign up while I'm in the Netherlands, just to say, you will get your sign-up details. You just may get them a few days later.
Yeah, yeah. That's quite a project to put one of those together, isn't it? I mean, you got to design, and I mean, that's quite a lot to it.
Tell me about it. yes. Yes, and whenever I do these, I sort of wonder why I do them. But actually, I really enjoy them. I mean, the designing I do anyway. And I love teaching. I've been a teacher for quite a bit of my professional life. And so it's great fun to help people try something new and sort of extend their hobby and really just enjoy what they're doing. And, you know, they may never be expert at it or whatever. I mean, I'm doing lots of things that I'm never going to be expert at, but I enjoy them and it's something new and I'm learning and that's what we're going for, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, what with stitch photographs and stitch diagrams and stitch descriptions and instructions and so on. Yeah, it's not going to pay me a great hourly wage.
Yep. Well, I know people will learn. I know that for a fact. So that's great.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Okay. So before we started talking, you and Vanna were talking about the quilter's knot, which is something I'm learning new here. So what you didn't know it as a quilter's knot?
I didn't know. I learned that knot from my grandmother. No idea why I learned it from her and not my mother, because she used them as well. And it was just the standard knot that we used for sewing. And when I came over here and started teaching embroidery, I was just sort of doing my instructions and saying, okay, put a knot in your thread. And I did that. And people looked at it and went, wow, how did you do that? Okay. So I was beginning to think that it was a Dutch thing or a continental thing or something like that. But it's interesting to hear that quilters have been doing this for years as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice knot. It's a quick knot. I mean, yeah, but that's what it was called when it was taught to me, that it was called a quilter's knot. So
it's so practical and so quick.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, that's where, yeah, I've yet to actually make one, but I learned from Vanna. So, I'm anxious to do it because, for away in waist knots, I spend an awful lot of time tying multiple knots to get one big enough. whatever. That's all I knew.
If it helps, somebody once described it as doing a French knot on the needle and pulling it down.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can visualize that. All right.
So I thought that might help.
Yeah. Well, I just need a big fat knot is what I need. So, Yep. All right. I'll be adding that to the arsenal. It's amazing. It's amazing as you... You know, just going through the days, all the little things you pick up.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's one of the great things of being together with other stitchers, because everybody knows things that you don't know. And most of those things are things that the other person says, oh, but I thought everybody did that.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, you get like that. That's where getting together with stitchers is so valuable, as you pick up those things. Yeah, I thought everybody knew this. And it's amazing how many items, many little tricks and tips that not anybody knows. But
I know. And anyway, it's just lovely being with other stitchers, and it's a great encouragement. And I'm finding that at the certificate meetings. I'm saying certificate meetings, but actually some of the people there are doing their diplomas and so on, because everybody's working on their own stuff. And last time when I brought my big tree of life in, I'd just been finishing the trunk, which is five shades of chain stitch shaded. And I've been working on that.
Five shades of chain stitch? Wow.
Well, it's rows and rows of chain stitch in sort of graded shades. And knowing how extremely picky the assessors are going to be, I've sort of unpicked and restitched and unpicked and restitched, and thinking, oh gosh, are all my chain stitches exactly 3 millimeters long and so on? And I've pretty much taking most of the enjoyment out of it, which was a shame. So I came to the meeting and unpacked my slate frame and put it on the trestles, and several of the others came around and said, wow, isn't that neat? I thought, okay, I'm being too perfectionist here. So just the idea that other stitchers who've been through the same thing, who know the work that goes into it and the precision that goes into it, if they say, wow, that's neat, then I'm going to have to accept that it's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, because that whole Royal School or anything at that level, it intrigues me in that it can be intimidating, but you're there to learn.
Yeah.
So you can't be intimidated. You just got to go and learn. But then, yeah, what is that expectation for quality, and at what point is it just nothing but work?
I think on the whole, I'd say that project for me is work. It's enjoyable work, but it's definitely work. But I'm feeling a little more relaxed about it now that I've sort of worked out for myself that actually I'm doing okay. So I'm sort of more into the enjoyment again, but,
okay.
Part of it is,
that's the thing, is finding that, I guess, happy medium in a situation like that, where you know it's going to be work going in. I don't think anybody would expect any less if you're going to learn and you're going to get to a new level. But at some point it does have to be fun, or you just dread it after a while.
Yes, and of course, once it starts to be a chore, you're not going to sit down to it quite so easily and quite so much. And in fact, it sort of gets this self-perpetuating thing of not wanting to do it and then not doing it and then falling far behind and feeling even worse about it. So it has to still be enjoyable. And I think one of the things that I like about it is that I have to be extremely precise. And a stitching friend asked, do you look at your own work differently now? Well, this is my own work as well, but I mean my own sort of design things. And I said, I've always looked at those with a critical eye, but the difference is that with those, I can decide that not quite perfect is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the certificate piece, I haven't really got that luxury.
Yeah, because their expectations are for the absolute best.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Are you finding that your own self-critique is putting you at the level they're looking for, or are you still reaching to find their level?
I seem to be doing okay, judging by what the tutors are saying.
Okay.
You know, they occasionally push and prod here or there and say, try this one, or perhaps if you could do it that way, and so on. But on the whole, they appear to be happy, so I'm happy.
Yeah. Do you find them overhauling your normal techniques, or do you find that you're pretty well in line with what their expectations are?
On the whole, not too bad. One of the things I did learn was with some of the stitches where you would normally pull through the fabric at an angle. So when you're doing a chain stitch, for example, and you've done that little loop and you bring the needle back up, catching the loop, and then you pull through to make that chain.
Right.
You're pulling the thread through at an angle. And if you do that too much with wool thread, and especially Appletons, and don't get me started, it's going to wear thin within a few stitches. And so what they told me was to... So think chain stitch, you come up, you go down in the same hole, but you leave a loop at the top. You bring the needle up and you catch that loop. But instead of pulling the needle through to the top, you actually, with your hand at the back of the work, pull through the thread until you've closed that loop and all your working thread is at the back of the work, and then you pull through to the front. And that means the thread goes through the fabric at a right angle and so has as little friction as possible. It's sometimes a bit difficult to visualize, but it is actually... It's a very clever way of doing it, and I've been doing that for stem stitch and all sorts of other stitches which have that same technique. So that's definitely something I've learned.
Well, see, now that's interesting, because Vaughn and I have had more than one discussion about silk threads fraying. Mm-hmm. And Vaughn has had a little more frustration than I have, but we both agree that they do fray. So the same principle should apply.
It should, yes. And it only works if you're working two-handed. So you've got one hand at the back of the work and one hand at the front, really. But if that's your way of stitching, it's a very good way of reducing the friction on the thread and so reducing the wear on the thread.
Hmm.
And the operative part then is to be at right angles to the ground cloth.
Yes, yes, when you pull the thread through.
And assuming that you have the right size needle to open that hole.
Oh, well... That as well, of course. And talking of needles.
Yes.
Because when we
go
first...
Go ahead, talk about needles.
Yes, please, please. First time we spoke, there was something about needles because you and Christine or possibly Arlene had been talking needles. And you were saying, yes, I really like the tulip ones, the extremely expensive ones. But sometimes I think they probably all come out of the same factory and they just stick different brands on. I don't know how serious you were.
Well, I would not be surprised to learn that. I would not be surprised. So.
But some years ago, I went back to the Netherlands and I went into a sewing machine shop and found some between needles or quilting needles. And they're nice because they're shorter. So if you work in a smallish hoop or very near the edge of the hoop, it's nice to have a slightly shorter needle to play with. It gives you a bit more room to maneuver. So I bought some and I took them back home and I really, really liked them. I thought I must get more of these. And I remembered they were Clover brand. So I looked which sizes I had. And unfortunately, I'd thrown away the original packaging. So I went to the Clover website and I couldn't find the sizes. And I contacted them and I said, look, I really want your size number 7 needle. I can't find them anywhere. And I got an email back in intriguing English saying that they never made number 7 needles. And I also asked why their number 12 needles are thicker than their number 10s, which is very unusual because normally if the number is higher, the needle is thinner.
Yes.
And they said, our Clover needles doesn't match its rule. Basically, we tried to fit rule, but some items it could not do so. which cleared that up.
Yeah.
but they didn't do a number 7, so I bought the closest thing to it and stitched with those. And I thought, do you know what? They're not nearly so nice as the ones I got back in the Netherlands. And I thought, surely they don't do different ones for the continental market and the UK market. That's ridiculous. And eventually when I went back and went to the sewing machine shop and looked at them, I realized that actually they were Prym needles, P-R-Y-M. and I'd,
so all and I this time, back, all this time you got the wrong brand.
And I'd been buying Clover needles with the black coating and the gold eyes and this, that, and the other, and they didn't live up to it. So I think I can confidently say that these because I thought I was stitching with the same needles and I noticed a difference. So I'm assuming that there really was a difference. Otherwise, I wouldn't have noticed it.
So these prim, is it prim?
I suppose that's how they're pronounced. Yeah. P-R-Y-M. They're German needles.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go, right there. They're German. But,
well,
so that's your favorite, huh?
It is. That's definitely my go-to needle. And I've ditched the John James's that we got with our certificate pack, and I'm using the prim ones for that as well, because they are just so smooth. I love them. And they're nice and short, which is good.
Yeah.
But so, yes, they definitely do not all come from the same factory. At least those don't.
Well, Vanna got me using Peacemaker, right? Peacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes. Are they an American brand? Because I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. They're made in Texas.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Are they bigger then? Sorry,
they're not shorts. Definitely not shorts.
Right.
And bigger than Texas. Yeah, that's right. They are bigger, probably.
Yeah. They're the biggest needles.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what Vanna got me going with those is, as she described it, it's the eye.
Mm-hmm.
I like them. I've been using them a little bit here. Well, recently I've been using them, and I actually got some tulip needles mixed in, and so mm-hmm. I've been kind of using them interchangeably, and yeah. I'm thinking 6 of 1, half dozen of the other, which makes Peacemaker win because they're cheaper.
So. Oh, definitely. Yes. I don't know what they charge over there, but the tulip ones here come to about £1 a piece, I think.
Yeah, that's, well.
I think they're about $2 a piece here.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's about the same then, yeah.
Yeah, and they're nice needles, but I don't think they're that nice, personally.
Right.
But, you know. With apologies to everybody who absolutely loves them. But prim needles, like the Peacemakers, are just sort of much more normal needle price.
Yeah. Well, I got started on those tulips, you know, Mary Corbett. You know, blame everything on Mary Corbett.
But, yes.
Yeah, because you can. But you know, when I first got them, and I mean, to me, they were, compared to what I was using, using Bowen or however you say that. And they're definitely a grade better than that by far. But were they worth the money? I don't know. And then I was using, at the time, size 28 Bowen needles, and those things are utter garbage. And they were just, they were wearing out. The eye was all chunky. I think I threw them all away. And the tulips were great. And then Vanna comes along and says, hey, try these Peacemakers.
Mm-hmm.
And, I really like them. So you can't get them bulk. It frustrates me.
Mm. No, but I think the thing to remember about any needles, even if you get the tulip ones and you really like them and they are £1 a piece or $2 a piece, compared with what you spend on the rest of your hobby, they are a minimal outlay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I definitely always recommend get the ones that you really, really like and change them as often as you feel is necessary, because, you know, they are in your fingers all the time. And if they at any point get uncomfortable or a bit difficult, then you're going to feel that and it's going to influence your stitching. So for goodness sake, get a new one. It's not going to break the bank.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and then, and then all this, and then it was, 3 or 4 months ago. Now, of course, I forgot her name. Lady I interviewed about Chinese and Japanese embroidery, and she's,
oh, yes.
Yeah. Still using the same needle she had eons ago. It's like, well, how does this work?
There are obviously exceptions.
Yes.
I think that those were made by the same people who make samurai swords, weren't
right.
they?
Yes.
So that's obviously a completely different category altogether.
Yeah, that's still a picture that I find enjoyment. Some guy making a great big long samurai sword, and then the next day he's making little embroidery needles.
Just, I know. Who said it was a women's thing?
Right. But that's, you know, and that just speaks, that there speaks to the quality of the metal and the craftsmanship. Yes. Yeah.
And the craftsmanship, yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's, craftsmanship is what is so important in any of the equipment that we use. And I was, just now I was using my, Aristo lap frame, lap stand, which is the needle leads, which goes with the Millennium frame.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the Millennium frame and I've got the Aristo lap stand, and they are just such beautiful workmanship. And, you know, I sit there and stroke the wood, honestly. And they're solid and they work and nothing jars and nothing screeches and squeezes, and all the little twisty bits work, and it's just beautiful. And I know that sometimes people have to wait 8 months or 9 months and communication isn't ideal with the company, but gosh, they're worth it. I told you last time, Gary, that we do vintage car stuff.
Yes.
And in that world too, you have people who are craftsmen, who are utter artists in what they do, in the car parts they make or in the restorations they do, but they are lousy businessmen. You know, they don't do deadlines, they don't do communication, they just do beautiful restorations.
Yeah.
And if somebody's a great painter or a great composer, we almost expect them to be completely incompetent in managing their diaries. So, you know, why would you expect an artist in any other craft to be better at that? That's not what they trained for.
Yeah. Yeah, I think where the Millennium people go astray is that they take the money up front. And that's it's hard for people, knowing that someone has a big chunk of their money and, you know, months are going by. I think if they just didn't do that one thing, I think they would find people much more patient.
Or have a deposit or something like that. But
right. Something, yes. Mm. But
the only thing I can say is, if you find that the communication isn't very good, try ringing them. Depending on your time zone, that might be a bit difficult. But I've found several times that if I rang them and just talked to them, things really speeded up and went really well. So.
Yeah, that's been the advice that I've been given and that I've given to others is just forget the email. Just call them.
Yeah.
Because the email, you just don't even bother. It's not worth it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But now go ahead.
No. Yeah.
But you took your Millennium frame now and applied a little slate frame skill to it. I was intrigued by that.
Yes. Normally, it doesn't actually need it because the tension on those things is so good. And I've used it for lots of projects where I just use the original setup as it comes, and the tension is remarkable. I mean, you can bounce a coin off it. And I would have done that here as well, but it's for one of the stitch along stitched models, and that's going to have a bit of gold work in it as well. So I wanted the linen backed with a calico muslin, do you call it?
Yeah.
And so it was two layers, and it was going to have gold work, which has quite a bit of pull to it. Especially when you're plunging your threads through to the other side and so on. So I thought it could probably do with a little bit of assistance. So I laced the sides in the same way that I laced the slate frame. And, you know, you could do a pretty good drum solo on that now. It's not that I'd advise it, not once there's any stitching on it, but, you know, it's really, I really like it. And it is so much more portable and just more convenient than the slate frame, because that is big and cumbersome and needs trestles, and it really isn't my thing.
Yeah, I was going to say you have not become friends with your slate frame.
Oh no, my slate frame and me, we have a difficult relationship. But
But see that now, Vonna has taken mitten clips and Velcro and and done, and you've had good success with that, haven't you, Vonna? With those on the side, you've gotten good side tension.
Yeah, I feel like it's. Oh yeah, I feel like it's good. I have to frequently, not frequently, but like once a week, redo them. But other than that, I don't have any problems. I really don't have any problems at all, to be honest with you, with mine. And they have made a distinct difference because in my frames, when they're smaller in spanning the scroll, it's, you know, I have found, I guess, that if I do smaller sidebars and just then I can maintain tension pretty doggone good, especially if it's a smaller span to, you know, with the span like 12 inches or less. They always stay, you know, very taut. But when I would get into, like, I guess on the queen samplers where I noticed it the first time, you were doing so much pulling and one stitch takes, you know, three or four passes for one stitch, you know, and it was like, I'm just don't feel like this is, you know, tight enough. And so I kept on, I didn't know that it was even a thing. I guess that there's a company that sells these, they don't call them mitten clips though. They call them side tensioners. And so I guess there's some company that does that. I was just in Joann's and saw mitten clips and then saw Velcro and thought, hey, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that. You know? So, I think they probably
just are mitten clips and people have rebranded them because they can charge more.
I would assume that that's what they are too. But the first time I posted it on Instagram or talked about it in a video or something, I had all these people write me and say, well, that's been out for years and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, I didn't say I came up with it. I'm just saying I came up with it for my own self, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, it does work well for me. I feel like I do have to, you know, fiddle with it a little bit sometimes, but I do feel that I do have much better tension than what I did prior to using them.
Do you find that you need quite a few along the length though to keep it even?
Yes. Yeah. I do feel like, so on, I'm doing, I'm looking here. I've got 8-inch sidebars on my queen right now and I have 2 on each side to pull. So.
All right, that's not as many as I thought you might need. So no, that's not too bad. With the lacing idea is that you sew strips to the sides, and then you lace through those strips, so you get a very nice even tension. But they're not quite as, if you scroll, I never scroll. I make sure that my my design fits into the window that I can see, if you like. So in that case, it doesn't really matter how laced you are because you don't have to undo it. See that if you scroll up your work to move along its length, then of course the mitten clips are much, much more easily adjusted.
Right. I bet you do get better tension than I do sewing on a strip and lacing it. I'm going to have to try that because that's intriguing to me. But I imagine that you get very much better tension doing that than with the mitten clips.
You get enormous tension, but it takes a lot longer than mitten clips. And if you have to scroll, then you have to unlace and unstitch and so on.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know that it would be worth it for a larger,
project. Do you use a sewing machine to sew the strips on?
No, sewing machines and I have an even worse relationship than slate frames and I, I'm afraid. I would probably sew myself to the fabric, so it's definitely all by hand.
So apparently she hand stitches them on, Vonna.
Yeah, hand stitches them on. Yeah. I would not, that can see that that would be very time consuming. With me, I just go zoop and then it would be done.
Yes, well, I have a sewing machine. I just need to learn to approach it with confidence and mastery and so on.
That is exactly what it takes. I mean, a sewing machine is just like a needle and thread. You just have to approach it confidently.
And one day I'm sure I will, but not quite yet.
What cord did you use to lace your Millennium frame? Just any old twine, or you must have had something?
Well, for sewing on the strips of herringbone, you use a buttonhole thread, which is good and strong. And then for the lacing, you use cotton twine, basically sort of parcel twine, really. And
I thought it looked like that. That's why I wanted to know. Yeah,
no, it is. And you use this absolutely lethal bracing needle, which you could probably, lard great big chunks of beef with if you wanted to. Or do some serious damage to anybody criticizing your stitching. But it takes time, but it does give tremendous tension.
Yeah. Now, as you lace that, are you working the tension all along, or how does that process work?
Well, when you're lacing the sides, you put a bit of tension on, but not that much, and then you just gradually increase. So you increase the tension top to bottom by pushing the rods out and putting the pegs in, if it's a slate frame. Or by screwing the sides up if you use a Millennium frame. And then you tighten the sides from the middle to the outsides, and then a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. So it's all a very gradual process.
Okay, so it is from the middle to the corners.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, of course, watching the weave of your linen to make sure it's staying square.
Well, if you've sewn on the herringbone bits fairly straight, and if you've sewn the fabric straight onto your scroll bars, then that sort of takes care of itself.
Oh, okay.
So that's fairly automatic. And that's one thing that I did like about the slate frame was its tension, and seeing that I can get the same sort of thing on the Millennium frame in a much more portable shape. I mean, that's me sorted. It's just that for the certificate, it's not allowed. So you have to use the slate frame.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't long-term, that's always a question I have, because on my Millennium frame, I will, if I'm not going to be working on it for several days, I'll crank it down and let the linen get slack. But that doesn't hurt then to have it long term. It doesn't hurt the linen at all to be so tight all the time.
Doesn't seem to be. I mean, the modules take, it depends on how quickly you work, but sort of between 8 months and a year. And in that time on the slate frame, it's tense all the time. And when you take it off, it is absolutely flat, which is wonderful. So, no, it doesn't seem to hurt it in the slightest, possibly because it's being stretched in all directions sort of to the same degree.
Yeah, equally.
Well, that was the part about the slate frame that really stuck with me when you told me that, I think it was in one of the shows, that when you take that thing off, it doesn't budge.
It doesn't. No, it's absolutely remarkable, because I saw somebody take off a piece with extremely heavy crewel work on it. And normally, the fabric just buckles in between and you have to get all those creases out. And this just absolutely flat as a board. Beautiful. So
see, that's almost worth it right there to me.
Yes. Yeah. That's the one thing that would sell it to me, I must say. And the other thing is, do you know the lady you were talking to who'd written the book? Oh, gosh, I've lost her name now. Very recently.
Oh,
you
Claire
had two
Hunter?
Sessions with her. Yes.
Yes.
And she mentioned the biotapestry at some point. And
yes.
I've been reading quite a lot about the biotapestry. And my degree was in English, so I did Old English as well, and, read Beowulf and Anglo-Saxon Chronicle and all that. And the language is completely different from modern English, and the world they describe is completely different from the modern world. And then you look at pictures of the biotapestry and you think, these women were doing exactly what I am doing today, and with pretty much the same equipment. our needles may be a bit better, but on the whole, if one of those women could come to my house today one of the very few things that she would immediately recognize would be my certificate setup with trestles and a slate frame and wool embroidery on linen. And the idea that we're sort of shaking hands across practically a millennium,
right,
is mind-blowing.
That's kind of neat to think about it in that way, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, how many hobbyists can say that, that you are basically doing exactly the same thing as people did 1,000 years ago?
With the same equipment, the same techniques, yeah. Everything, yeah.
In fact, I'm even using a bit of bio stitch in my certificate design, so they would definitely recognize that.
That's quite a thing to think about, yeah. Mm. Well, that was talking to Claire about that tapestry and her, you talked about once you spend time with it, you get connected to it and get immersed and how impressive it looks. She really changed my view of that thing because the pictures, as I said to her, they look like just a whole lot of really fairly crude stitching, but apparently not that at all. Apparently it's pretty sophisticated work.
It is, and it's a very economical way of stitching. If you look at the back of the book I'm reading at the moment has a picture that shows the back of a bit where there's a horse and a rider and so on. And there's hardly any stitching there at all.
Mm.
It's all at the front. It's such an economical way of doing things. And I think what throws most people possibly is that the design to our mind is quite simple and flat because there's only those eight colors and you get red horses with two blue legs and yellow manes and but I suppose a generation that's seen Picasso
well when she talked about how they used tension and just various techniques to gain dimension and put feeling into it. That really opened my eyes in terms of what that thing has to offer. I mean, to the point where, geez, if I ever get over to Europe again, I might have to try and find my way to see that. It probably would be worth it.
I think so. Yes. I'd definitely like to do that if I ever get over to France. So, but it's, yes, I like that link to the past. That we're pretty much the same sort of needle people now as they were then.
Yeah, well, and that was one thing that in talking with Claire is the connection that needlework has across cultures and across languages too.
Yeah,
you could sit down in the same room and communicate without saying a word, yes.
Yeah, and that reminds me of all those stitches that have different names and so on. I mean, you just demonstrate to somebody who spoke only Uzbek or whatever, and they probably recognize the stitch even if they called it something completely different. But on the other hand, I've been doing all these stitch diagrams and the stitch pictures, and the number of times that I think, I've been doing this already, and then I realize that actually fly stitch is very much like buttonhole stitch, is very much like feather stitch, is very much like cretin stitch, because they all do exactly the same thing. You go up, you go down, and you catch the loop, just in slightly different directions and with slightly longer or shorter arms and holding stitches. So right. That's one of the things I think that makes it a nice thing to do, is that you learn a few stitches and you can start varying like anything and do all sorts of interesting things with them.
Yeah.
Which is how quite a few of those stitches actually came into being.
Right. Oh yeah. How many of the stitches we do today are mistakes off of something else? Yeah.
Yes. Somebody went to the left instead of the right and suddenly they had a new stitch.
Right. Yeah. It looked good. They went with it. Yep. Yeah. Now that would be a fun chart to have. Take any stitch and then go around the world and what do you call this? I bet that
even within one language, you often get things called by several names. And
right.
People call it one thing. And I was just doing something for a stitch that I know is bead edging, but some people call rosette chain. it's exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's just got two different names, and that's both in English. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the whole scientific world where you're naming plants and animals. Mm-hmm. You know, your scientist will go to the Latin because that cuts across all those local names, and everybody then can speak the same language. But
yeah. You
know, we don't have that. We just have the thread and the stitch, and it doesn't matter what you call it. This is how you do it. Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And then, geez, how can we always run out of time? You did a blog here recently that I thought was most interesting because you were addressed whether to wax or not wax thread.
That's right, yes. It came through a couple of questions from people, one in reaction to a blog post I wrote before that, who's talking about was it okay to use thread heaven on silk mill silks? And I said I'd never used thread heaven myself, but I understood that it was a man-made substance. And so if I was going to use any conditioner on silk, I was going to use beeswax because it's a natural substance. It's been around for centuries and people have been using it for centuries. We know what it does to threads long term, which is absolutely nothing, which is exactly what you want.
Yeah.
So. And with thread heaven, I simply couldn't say because A, I had never used it, and B, we don't really know what it does to threads over several decades. And then on the Mary Corbett Facebook group, somebody had asked about silk mill silks, whether they would lie flat because they're filament silks, but they are quite springy. And I said, well, I've only used it for split stitch on the Opus Anglicanum workshop that I did. So I couldn't really tell, but hey, I can feel an experiment coming. So I took a little central bit out of a Mary Corbett freebie, which gave opportunity to do stem stitch and satin stitch. And then I did bits of stem stitch, waxed and unwaxed, and bits of satin stitch, waxed and unwaxed. And personally, I would not wax. It makes it slightly more manageable, but I do feel that it affects the shine, and shine is part of what makes silk silk. So
yeah, well, it was an interesting experiment because Vonna and I've had this discussion too. Because Vonna, you used to use thread heaven or something, and you quit using that, haven't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just because of your good influence, Gary.
Oh, is that what happened to you?
Yeah.
I apologize for that.
So, Vonna, what did you find was the effect of using the thread heaven?
Well, the way I stitch cross-stitch, actually the way I stitch anything, is that I don't come up with I stitch two-handed, and I don't come up with the point of the needle. I come up with the eye so that the thread is never – it never twists. It just lays, you put it in the needle and it just stays in the same place, you know, never twists. And, so I used it because I felt like the wear on the thread was less, you know what I mean? With the thread heaven. Mm-hmm. I personally did not like beeswax because even with just cotton threads, because of what you say, I felt like the shine was dulled and I just didn't like, I think it made it like really tacky, almost like not good. You know what I mean? I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
And, but with that being said, I use beeswax on anything that I quilt or sew by hand.
Yeah.
I use beeswax on all of that. Mm-hmm. But, I use thread heaven just mainly because I felt like it strengthened the thread or did something to it so that it didn't fray or get fuzzy as much. And then also it made like a polarity or a charge on that thread so that when I was stitching with two or more threads, it like repelled each other. And therefore I didn't have to lay with a laying tool or railroad or anything like that because they just naturally repelled each other and stayed side by side rather than twisting.
that's an interesting one, because one of the things I noticed when I was using it on the silk, especially if I was when I was doing the satin stitch, was that it looked much more sort of cord-like.
Mm-hmm.
So the surface didn't blend into each other.
Mm-hmm.
The threads didn't blend into each other to make a shiny surface. They were much more distinct.
Mm-hmm.
Which must be the same sort of effect.
And yeah.
One of the things, if you do want to use wax like that, and, you know, some people will, and that's fine, but remember to take your fingers along the mm-hmm. thread, your nails along the thread, and get the mm-hmm. excess off, because
yeah.
the last thing you want is bits of excess wax on your fabric, because
right.
they are almost impossible to get off again. Trust me.
Yeah.
Voice of experience.
And that's what I did whenever I, because I wrote a big long thing about it on my blog at one point, you know, several years ago, about my using Thread Heaven, because I'm sure, you know, everybody wants to know what you use, you know, and people, I get questions yep. over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, I just usually get a blog post, so that rather than writing 150 times why I do something, I can just say, go look at this blog post, you know? So that's what I did. That's what I did as well too, is that when I would run it through the Thread Heaven, or now it's basically the same product, just a different name here in the States. It's called Thread Magic. I would run it through that substance, and then I would take it through my pointer and my thumbnail and just yeah. run the thread through it like that. I never saw anything like it had left a residue or that it dulled the shine or anything like that. I suspect that there's probably maybe silicone in it, because it did make the thread slippier, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. So I imagine that there was probably silicone in it, but I don't use it at all anymore. If I use anything now, it's just a damp sponge, and I run my thread over the damp sponge and yes. then through my fingers just to get the excess wet off of it before I go. But really, I've not even been doing that. I've just been using nude thread. I'm just the nude threaded user now.
Oh, now we have a new term now. Oh, great.
The new thread user. It's so true. It's as with the needles. I mean, you know, the thread, even when you use the most expensive silk thread, it's going to make such a difference to your work if you just change the thread in good time. And I'm guilty of not doing that, because if you give me the choice, I work with as long a length as I can get away with, because I don't like fastening on and off. Because of working with wool more recently, I've sort of learned that simply doesn't work. So
yeah.
you have to work with shorter lengths. Otherwise, the look of your work is going to suffer. And, you know, if you're putting in many, many, many hours, why would you want to not make it as good as you can?
Right.
So, yes. And I know that, you know, I'm not exactly rolling in it. And I know stitches are on a budget and so on. But you can do such a lot with standard threads and fairly, you know, good, affordable fabric. And it doesn't have to be an expensive hobby. It can be. Gosh, you can go all out and go completely mad on all sorts of interesting threads and gold work materials and what have you. But you don't have to. And that's one of the things I really like about it. One of the things I wanted to do for the Stitch Along was to make sure that it was affordable. And so I worked out that if you had to buy everything from scratch, and that includes every skein of DMC, you could do it for under £25.
Mm-hmm.
And probably less in America, because your stranded cotton is so much less expensive than ours. I mean, yeah. what do you pay for stranded cotton?
Well, now we pay 75 cents. Isn't it about 75 cents, or is it? Oh, yeah. It's 55. I think it's yeah. 55 cents.
Yeah.
Yes.
A skein.
And then you get coupons and so on and
right.
Yeah, savvy people are getting it down at the right time of year with a coupon, 35, 40 cents a skein, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas we're lucky. I mean, I found one that did them at 75p, which would be, what, 85, 90 dollar cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
well, we'd have a cow if we had to pay that much for DMC.
Yeah, riots in the street.
That's right.
But when I started, I mean, when I started stitching, DMC was 25 cents a skein. And I mean, I don't feel, I'm 49 years old, but I don't feel like I'm that old.
Oh,
and in my lifetime, I can remember when I first started stitching, which was when I was 15 years old. When I first like went out and decided, you know, I'm going to do this, it was 25 cents a skein.
Oh my goodness. So we're both 1970 girls then.
Yes, yes, yes. I am was born in 1970.
Wonderful. Good year.
Bunch of kids.
I know. Can I ask you, Vonna, about the fanny frame seat stand thing that you sit on? Sort of UK blushes here. The one I've got is the Sonata, which has an extra tilt. And one of the things you said is that you don't like to have the paddle sort of from the side.
Yeah, side saddle. I don't like that.
Yeah. Is that because
she likes it right in the crotch, right?
And there I was trying to remain a certain decorum.
Forget that.
That's obviously not working. Seriously, because when I had a seat frame like that, which I borrowed at the RSN at one of the classes, one of the things I wear long skirts, so I couldn't do the other one.
Right.
I had to use it side saddle. Mm-hmm. And when it tilts, it either sits completely level with the floor or mm-hmm. it tilts down to your right hand. Mm-hmm. Is that what yours does?
Yeah, mine just goes up or down, but it can go a full 180 degrees.
But does it tilt towards you if you have it side saddle?
No. Oh, no, it does not.
No.
No, and that's what I wanted. And
so yours does that?
Mine does that, yes. It's called the Sonata seat frame. I got it from a company called Barnyards, and I rang them. And my goodness, for customer service, I rang and I tried to explain to this man, poor chap, how I wanted this seat frame to tilt. And bless him, he got one from the storage room and took it out of its packaging and sort of put it together fairly makeshift and tried to tilt it the way I tried to explain to him. And he said, well, I think it does what you are describing. But you know what? If you buy it and it doesn't do it, send it back and we'll pay for the return postage.
Oh. So yours at the joint then has a two-way swivel then?
Yes.
Up
yes,
and
it
down
does.
And you got the yaw and the whatever, yeah.
Yeah, so when I use it side saddle, I can tilt it towards me any which way. So that sort of saved it for me because I couldn't use the other one. And so that really works very well. But like you, Vonna, I love my seat frame.
It is so portable.
It will take pretty much anything. I don't think it takes the 14-inch hoop that I'm using for the stitch along, but you know, anything up to a good 10 inches, 11, 12, it will take that. But is yours the ones with where you have hoops on sticks that you put in?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm. So the stick is attached to the hoop.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So you can't like clamp a new hoop on it. But this, I don't know that I'd want a very much bigger hoop than mm-hmm. what I have. I think it is 9 inches is what my hoop is in it.
That's a good size. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can quite easily get different hoops for it. I mean, you know, you can use them all with the same seat.
Right. Right.
Can't you? That's right.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, what is the brand again?
It's Sonata. Sonata, as in music. Sonata. If you pop that into the search bit on my blog, there's a post about it.
Oh, okay.
You should find something about it. Because I've tried other ones as well, and when I took this out of the box, it just felt so much more solid than the other ones I tried. So that was really good. It can basically take me sitting on this, which is a good thing.
is it expensive?
I I got mine from that company because they were so very helpful, and I think it was £28. But if you look around, you can get it for less than that.
Oh, see, that's not bad at all then.
No, no, it was very affordable.
And I think the company, I think it's a UK company, Elbanese. They
Well, I think they do the ones that you've got, which don't tilt.
Okay.
I'm not absolutely sure who makes the Sonata, but I'm sure we could find out.
Well, we can't look at that, Gary. We can't look at the Sonata.
We can't?
No, because we've got enough stuff.
What do you mean you've got enough stuff?
Listen to the pot. Listen to the pot. Yeah. Okay.
But I just I have my my seat frame here right now. And as you were talking, I was trying it on the side saddle, and I don't like it on the side saddle.
That's absolutely fine.
But I think the reason is for exactly what you say. I want it, if I want it side saddle, I want it to tilt closer to my left hand. Cause if I would have it from my right hand side, I would want it closer to my left hand side. If I would do it under my left hand side, I want it closer to my right hand. So it's exactly what you said. I would need something. And that's why I don't use it on the side, because it's right in the middle if I put it right between my leg, you know.
You just use it full frontal, yes.
Quite. Right, full frontal, yeah.
We've come up with acceptable terms, side saddle and full frontal, see? Yeah. That works.
See, yeah, we can do this in a nice ladylike fashion.
Yeah.
And gentleman-like, of course.
Yeah, I'm not using the terminology that you use. That makes me blush.
Yeah, well, there. So now it's side saddle and full frontal. Yeah,
that's right, full frontal.
Well, see, because when I do it, I don't like it full frontal. I just don't. And so I have to have it under my right thigh, but then I have the vertical post in between my legs. So then I can turn that thing and have the tilt. But Ilka, the Sonata one, where it could be on my outside of my leg and then tilted. See, that's appealing.
Yep. I know. I really like that about it. Yes, that's one of my sort of recommendations, I think, for kit. You don't need it, but it makes stitching nicer. And I take it to my stitching groups. And it just gives me that. I can work with both hands. I can work two-handed. And it's portable. Wonderfully portable.
I can't believe this, Gary. You're not going to believe it. I'm looking it up, right?
I knew that's why you've gotten quiet.
The Sonata seat frame. It is $31.20 on Etsy from Chingford, United Kingdom. Chingford, United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well.
Okay. And Ilka, the hoop that goes with that is of good quality?
It doesn't come with a hoop because it's a
clamp. No, it's a clamp on.
So you just put whatever hoop you've got into it. Oh. And it's a good wine clamp. So I've used it with the deep quilting hoops as well.
Uh-huh.
Oh gosh.
Oh.
oh dear. Have I been?
Yes, you have. Oh. Yes, you have.
And it's
all my fault.
Yep. Yeah, I must say it looks very, very tempting.
Yeah.
Very tempting.
Yes, Ilka, you have caused trouble. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Well, you always say we can blame Fiber Talk. You can now blame me.
Yeah.
It's all right. I can handle it.
Yep. Oh, okay. All right. Now I got to look this up. See?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Because I got plenty of hoops. Hoops aren't the problem.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I've got, as you say, I've got plenty of hoops, and it was nice to be able to use those just with the frame. I've got a table clamp as well, which is quite useful for anything up to about 7 inches. After that, it starts wobbling.
Mm-hmm.
But this one definitely takes 8 to 10 inches. And I've now found that I can actually use my the Aristo lap stand, which goes with the Millennium frame. the one disadvantage I found on that is that you can't use it with hoops.
Right.
Because the hoop I'm using for the stitch along is so absolutely humongous, I have never worked with anything that was 14 inches. That will actually go on there and sit quite nicely. So, hey, I'm happy.
Yeah. Because see, for me, it's travel.
And
you know, the stand we have now, it just breaks down and like everything goes into my one bag.
Mm-hmm.
And so it immediately becomes a whole lot easier and easier to set up in a hotel room. And
yep.
It just eliminates a lot of things. But this Sonata one,
Yeah, I think we're going to have to get it.
if I can mention something that might sort of dissuade you.
Okay.
Once you've put it together, it doesn't come apart. Well, obviously it will come apart. Because you just unscrew everything, but it's not meant to be sort of flat packed for transport. So I transport it as it is, but you know it's not that big, so it does work for me. I just have a shoulder bag with it in it,
yeah.
And my stitching in a.
How does the post go into the base?
It's screwed in.
Yeah. And in fact, that takes quite a lot of strength. I had to get my husband to do the final bits because I couldn't get it tight enough together. Once it's together, you know, it is solid. But as I say, it doesn't come apart. So have I saved you money now?
Probably not.
No, probably not.
Nice try. You know, valiant effort, but no.
Yeah, well, I thought I ought to give you a balanced view.
Yeah, good try. Good try. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You've caused enough trouble, Ilka. That's we're going to call it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It took you an hour, but you did it. Yeah.
Good. Well, that's me not being asked again.
Okay. So the stitch along starting in January at it's mabelfigworthy.co.uk is the website. And
is it? Yes, it is. Yes. Good.
Yes, it is.
Yes, thank you.
I'll cover you on that. So you can sign up there and read her blog. I never miss your blog. Always something good in there. So,
thank you.
Yep. So that's Ilka. Thank you.
Thank you. It was very enjoyable as usual.
Always is. All right. Thanks to everybody for listening.